File 64.
The intellectual faculties of the Jew have been trained through thousands of years. Today, the Jew is looked upon as specially cunning. And in a certain sense, he has been so throughout the ages. His intellectual powers, however, are not the result of an inner evolution, but rather have been shaped by the object lessons which the Jew has received from others. The human spirit cannot climb upwards without taking successive steps. For every step upwards, it needs the foundation of what has been constructed before, the past, which, in the comprehensive sense here employed, can have been laid only in a general civilization. All thinking originates only to a very small degree in personal experience. The largest part is based on the accumulated experiences of the past. The general level of civilization provides the individual, who in most cases is not consciously aware of the fact, with such an abundance of preliminary knowledge that with this equipment he can more easily take further steps on the road of progress. The boy of today, for example, grows up among such an overwhelming mass of technical achievement which has accumulated during the last century that he takes as granted many things which 100 years ago were still mysteries even to the greatest minds of those times. Yet these things that are not so much a matter of course are of enormous importance to those who would understand the progress we have made in these matters and would carry on that progress a step further. If a man of genius belonging to the 20s of the last century were to arise from his grave today, he would find it more difficult to understand our present age than the contemporary boy of 15 years of age, who may even have only an average intelligence. The man of genius, thus come back from the past, would need to provide himself with an extraordinary amount of preliminary information which our contemporary youth receive automatically, so to speak, during the time they are growing up among the products of our modern civilization. Since the Jew, for reasons that I shall deal with immediately, never had a civilization of his own, he has always been furnished by others with a basis for his intellectual work. His intellect has always developed by the use of those cultural achievements which he has found ready to hand around him. The process has never been the reverse. For though among the Jews the instinct of self-preservation has not been weaker, but has been much stronger than among other peoples, and though the impression may easily be created that the intellectual powers of the Jew are at least equal to those of other races, the Jews completely lack the most essential prerequisite of a cultural people, namely the idealistic spirit. With the Jewish people, the readiness for sacrifice does not extend beyond the simple instinct of individual preservation. In their case, the feeling of racial solidarity which they apparently manifest is nothing but a very primitive, gregarious instinct, similar to that which may be found among other organisms in this world. It is a remarkable fact that this herd instinct brings individuals together for mutual protection only as long as there is a common danger which makes mutual assistance expedient or inevitable. The same pack of wolves which a moment ago joined together in a common attack on their victim will dissolve into individual wolves as soon as their hunger has been satisfied. This is also sure of horses, which unite to defend themselves against any aggressor, but separate the moment the danger is over. It is much the same with the Jew. His spirit of sacrifice is only apparent. It manifests itself only so long as the existence of the individual makes this a matter of absolute necessity. But as soon as the common foe is conquered, and the danger which threatened the individual Jews is overcome, and the prey secured, then the apparent harmony disappears, and the original conditions set in again. Jews act in concord only when a common danger threatens them, or a common prey attracts them. Where these two motives no longer exist, then the most brutal egotism appears, and these people who before had lived together in unity will turn into a swarm of rats that bitterly fight against each other. If the Jews were the only people in the world, they would be wallowing in filth and mire, and would exploit one another and try to exterminate one another in a bitter struggle, except insofar as their utter lack of the ideal of sacrifice, which shows itself in their cowardly spirit, would prevent this struggle from developing. Therefore, it would be a complete mistake to interpret the mutual help which the Jews render one another when they have to fight, or, to put it more accurately, to exploit their fellow being as the expression of a certain idealistic spirit of sacrifice. Here again, the Jew merely follows the call of his individual egotism. That is why the Jewish state, which ought to be a vital organization to serve the purpose of preserving or increasing the race, has absolutely no territorial boundaries. For the territorial delimitation of a state always demands a certain idealism of spirit on the part of the race which forms that state, and especially a proper acceptance of the idea of work. A state which is territorially delimited cannot be established or maintained unless the general attitude towards work be a positive one. If this attitude be lacking, then the necessary basis of a civilization is also lacking. That is why the Jewish people, despite the intellectual powers with which they are apparently endowed, have not a culture, and certainly not a culture of their own. The culture which the Jew enjoys today is the product of the work of others, and this product is debased in the hands of the Jew. In order to form a correct judgment of the place which the Jew holds in relation to the whole problem of human civilization, we must bear in mind the essential fact that there never has been any Jewish art, and consequently that nothing of this kind exists today. We must realize that especially in those two royal domains of art, namely architecture and music, the Jew has done no original creative work. When the Jew comes to producing something in the field of art, he merely bowdlerizes something already in existence, or simply steals the intellectual word of others. The Jew essentially lacks those qualities which are characteristic of those creative races that are the founders of civilization. To what extent the Jew appropriates the civilization built up by others, or rather corrupts it, to speak more accurately, is indicated by the fact that he cultivates chiefly the art which calls for the smallest amount of original invention, namely the dramatic art. And even here he is nothing better than a kind of juggler, or perhaps, more correctly speaking, a kind of monkey imitator, for in this domain also he lacks the creative élan which is necessary for the production of all really great work. Even here, therefore, he is not a creative genius, but rather a superficial imitator, who, in spite of all his retouching and tricks, cannot disguise the fact that there is no inner vitality in the shape he gives his products. At this juncture, the Jewish press comes in and renders friendly assistance by shouting hosannas above the head of even the most ordinary bungler of a Jew, until the rest of the world is stampeded into thinking that the object of so much praise must really be an artist, whereas in reality he may be nothing more than a low-class mimic. No, the Jews have not the creative abilities which are necessary to the founding of a civilization, for in them there is not, and never has been, that spirit of idealism which is an absolutely necessary element in the higher development of mankind. Therefore, the Jewish intellect will never be constructive, but always destructive. At best, it may serve as a stimulus in rare cases, but only within the meaning of the poet's lines. The power which always wills the bad and always works the good. Kraft, die stets das Böse, will uns stets das Gute schaffen. It is not through his help, but in spite of his help, that mankind makes any progress. Since the Jew has never had a state which was based on territorial delimitations, and therefore never a civilization of his own, the idea arose that we were here dealing with a people who had to be considered as nomads. That is a great and mischievous mistake. The true nomad does actually possess a definite, delimited territory where he lives. It is merely that he does not cultivate it, as the settled farmer does, but that he lives on the products of his herds, with which he wanders over his domain. The natural reason for this mode of existence is to be found in the fact that the soil is not fertile, and that it does not give the steady produce which makes a fixed abode possible. Outside of this natural cause, however, there is a more profound cause, namely, that no mechanical civilization is at hand to make up for the natural poverty of the region in question. There are territories where the Aryan can establish fixed settlements by means of the technical skill which he has developed in the course of more than 1,000 years, even though these territories would otherwise have to be abandoned, unless the Aryan were willing to wander about them in nomadic fashion, but his technical tradition and his age-long experience of the use of technical means would probably make the nomadic life unbearable for him. We ought to remember that during the first period of American colonization, numerous Aryans earned their daily livelihood as trappers and hunters, etc., frequently wandering about in large groups with their women and children, their mode of existence very much resembling that of ordinary nomads. The moment, however, that they grew more numerous and were able to accumulate larger resources, they cleared the land and drove out the aborigines, at the same time establishing settlements which rapidly increased all over the country. The Aryan himself was probably at first a nomad and became a settler in the course of ages, but yet he was never of the Jewish kind. The Jew is not a nomad, for the nomad has already a definite attitude towards the concept of work, and this attitude served as the basis of a later cultural development when the necessary intellectual conditions were at hand. There is a certain amount of idealism in the general attitude of the nomad, even though it be rather primitive. His whole character may, therefore, be foreign to Aryan feeling, but it will never be repulsive. But not even the slightest trace of idealism exists in the Jewish character. The Jew has never been a nomad, but always a parasite, battening on the substance of others. If he occasionally abandoned regions where he had hitherto lived, he did not do it voluntarily. He did it because from time to time he was driven out by people who were tired of having their hospitality abused by such guests. Jewish self-expansion is a parasitic phenomenon, since the Jew is always looking for new pastures for his race.